This is our pre-show for Monday, the 28th of October, 2019. I know that I thought I'd be able to produce two new shows while I was on the road here in Atlanta for Monday and Tuesday, but that was not the case. However, what we have found, what I found were some encore shows that are kind of favorites of mine. One is the Arse Gardner show, who, I don't know, to me, it's funny. He doesn't use or. And the other is Don Berman's news experiment in just making up news stories to see if you catch it or not falls flat. That's tomorrow. So this is our pre-show for today. Something I didn't share with a lot of you guys, and this may be a two-parter pre-show. Who knows? You know, like part one today, part one, or part two tomorrow. But something I didn't share with you, my BSPs, was the subject of a recent planned TED Talk that I was asked to do and I've decided not to do. And it has nothing to do whatsoever with the quality of the people or the quality of the venues. It has nothing whatsoever to do with TED Talks or any of the people that asked me to do it. It had to do with the subject that I kind of hit upon when I was asked to do this. I wondered, well, what can I talk about? I'm going to talk about how to make a radio show or how to do funny voices. I don't want to do that. And I hit on really kind of my life story, which is probably not as unusual as some people's, but nonetheless, it's unique to me, and it has its travails and its ups and its downs and its dramas and its tragedies. And I felt like that topic was not, it was too personal for me to just drop it out on a TED Talk someplace. It needed a better venue. And this is a good venue right here because you guys are my listeners, you're my customers. You believe in the product and you have been here for me for many years, some of you. It's funny, I see our subscriptions renewing, you know, some of the subscription renewals that we have, and I see people renewing at the $4 and what is it, $4.30 rate, and some of you don't even know what was that? When was there a $4.30 subscription? There was a brief period of time, maybe about 2 years, maybe 3 years, where we offered an audio-only subscription, and we stopped doing that, but people who got grandfathered in to their subscription at that level still have those, still pay that rate. So every now and again, and sometimes it's quite, I'll see like three or four of them in a row, people who jumped in at the $4 rate for audio only. And they, you know, I look at those folks and they're long time, long standing backstage pass people. So, and the more I think about it, the more I think that really I should be directing my efforts exclusively, almost exclusively, at the Backstage Pass subscriber, not any other audience. The only reason why I should direct anything at an outside audience is for marketing. That is to promote business. But something like this that I engage in, not just the pre-show where I'm doing funny, you're hearing me prep the show, but giving you kind of a background on something really personal that I will do here, is not for public consumption. It's really definitely for listeners who, you know, I would say are on a professional level friends, you know, not personal friends, but you guys are friends of the work, you know, and that's more than I can say for. Well, if you think that's any kind of a valuable thing, I would say that that's more than I would say for any other people that I know, except for my personal friends and family. So you guys are kind of sitting there at just below the not just below. That's a stupid way of putting it. You guys are on a different track, but the same road. How about that? But getting back to the TED Talk. Because I'm sitting here, I'm in Atlanta, I'm going to be going home soon. I wasn't here very long. And I was here on business, and I was here for personal reasons as well. And it's interesting how this city, which has a lot of good memories for me, is also a place where I confronted, as I did every step of the way, really hardcore traditional people. Because as liberal as Atlanta is, I'd say artistically, and it is, it's a very conservative and liberal politically. It's a very liberal city politically. And I would even say that socially, in terms of certain topics, certain areas, it's liberal. But in terms of its just everyday outward mode, Atlanta's very conservative. It's a city of long dresses, and it's a city of your Sunday best, and it's a city of suit coats and ties, and yeah, people get a little preppy here, but as you know, even the most casual people in Atlanta are in shorts, but they look very respectful. Like, where I am here is very close to Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech is it's what you would think it is. It's filled with geeks and dorks, and I say that with great respect. And I was just at the supermarket near my hotel, a public supermarket. I was in there just, you know, looking around for like coffee and a sushi and, you know, crap like that that I could take back to my hotel room. And there were all these really dorky looking but conservative looking Georgia Tech kids. And you know what? It doesn't matter the generation. Those kind of four-eyed people that we all knew, and I say this with great affection, by the way. I don't mean to insult anybody, believe me, because a lot of them were my friends and still are. In fact, my best friend in the world, Don, I could say was probably a four-eye back when we were in high school. They don't change from generation to generation. You just know who they are. It's kind of like when I went to the Don Anthony boot camp here in Atlanta several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, and I walked into the bar. And I said, it didn't matter what generation of people. At that time, I was in my early 50s, maybe late 40s. I knew they were radio people. They could be like 19, 20, 21. I knew they were my people, you know, just the sound of the bar and the sound of the mayhem in the place. And so I come back here to Atlanta, and it reminds me of this step in my career, which was a big step. It was my first... my first major market doing the completely revamped Phil Henry show. I don't talk a lot about my career before August of 1990 because there's not a lot to talk about. It's really a period of time that represented half measures, three-quarter measures, wasted opportunities, wasted potential. Far too much self-doubt, far, far too much giving credit to the wrong kinds of people, far too much trying to fit in, far too much trying not to rock the boat, far too much trying to be a good guy. I mean, my life was all about that before August of 1990, when I said, fuck this, you know. Basically, and I really didn't do it with anger. I said it more with, you know, it was very liberating for me, because before that point professionally, I was this man who I was from the point of birth, actually, a guy who had all of these extreme instincts and crazy impulses creatively and wild notions and funny voices and, you know, and the need to express myself that way, but also the fear of doing that, because I was afraid I was giving vent to a bad part of me. And why did I think that was a bad part of me? Because, you know, I had in my heart of hearts a dislike of my own mother. From the time I was very young, I began to not like her very much. And I thought there was something really fucking wrong with it. A guy that doesn't like his, or even love his mother, there's something really fucked up about you, right? Isn't that what you think? That's what I thought. You never go to this place. You never go to this place of, well, what the fuck did she do to you, man? You don't dare go there. What could she possibly have done to you? Mothers don't do bad things, okay? Because the nuns told me that, because the teachers told me that, because the doctors told me that, because everybody told you that, society told you that. So throughout my life, from my very early years on up into my teen years, into my 20s and 30s, I wrestled and struggled with this revulsion. I struggled with this dislike of this woman. And I thought, there's got to be something fucking wrong with me. So what do? You try to be as good a guy as you can. You try to, you know, as Confucius said, and he's not the only one, you know, if you display an outward proper behavior, then that will eventually turn you inside to a proper human being. You know, Confucian philosophy dictates that, you know, always maintain a proper moral appearance, and your interior, your internal life will reflect that. So at least, you know, or as the Christians say, act as if ye have faith and faith will be given to you, that kind of thing. So there's nothing new under the sun. There's no, you know, I'd like to say Jesus came up with that one, but he didn't. But in any event, that's what I did. So I tried to be a good son, and I brought my mother gifts. I took her out on Mother's Day, and, you know, and it was always just a excruciating experience. And I had to, you know, I needed to maintain myself. I needed to maintain myself professionally. I wanted so much to be more than I was as an artist, but I would never, ever allow myself to voice that part of me that I needed to be the artist I wanted to be, because that was so odd. You know, doing voices and creating characters, being an actor, whatever you want to call it, that was so bohemian and so off the beaten track and so non-mainstream that it had to be bad. And if it's bad, it's probably part of that thing that causes you not to love your mother. See? And that's a very personal story. That was a story that I was going to tell on a stage in front of people, and I said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, this is as good a place as any to sort of delve into that a little bit. I'm not going to make a big thing out of it, but the first part of this is that that was how I conducted my life, really, until the age of 38. 38 years of my life. There was a very early part of my life, you know, when you're a little kid, you're so dependent upon your parents, especially your mom, that we had a great relationship. You know, my mother was like our mothers are to all of us. She was my whole world, you know. And but at some point, things turned and changed, and I became very, I didn't want to be around her. I actually talked to her a little bit about it when she came to visit me in Minneapolis. And it was very shocking to her to hear that I had these feelings. And I have to tell you one more thing that'll probably be very, very stunning to a lot of you. When my mother died, I didn't mourn her. And I haven't mourned her since. Not in the traditional sense. But one thing that has happened for me is that I have really forgiven her. I understand her. She didn't have an easy life. I can honestly say that I love her. It's not tearing me up like it did, you know. It's not inhibiting me anymore. It's not causing me to stop my life as I used to, you know. You might say, well, what happened to you, Phil? How did you change? It was recognizing that the dislike of my mother, if you want to call it, that was connected to my inability to advance further in my career. I realized those two things were tied together. Because if I kept on stepping on all of my creative instincts because of this feeling, I don't want to be abnormal, I don't want to dislike my mother, I want to be a better guy. Because of that, I couldn't gain any real traction. And when I finally stopped giving a fuck, when I finally said, you know, I've got to do what I have to do, I've got to be the person I have to be, that's when I started to face the reality of that stuff having to do with my mom. You know, what the hell happened there, man? I'm not going to get into any of the wherefores and the whys. I'm not going to get into any deeper material than where I've gone, because it's not necessary. But it's enough for me to say to you, I learned what it was. I figured it out. And it helped me, you know, get how tough her life had been. It helped me get what she'd been through. And, you know, I really do. I do love her. I do forgive her. And I think she's, you know, I think there was a hell of a lot there going on with Marjorie Hendry that I wish to God she could have been able to express, you know. But she was held down too, man. She was choking to death too on something. So I'm gonna revisit this topic a little bit more, other pre-shows probably. And like everything else, you know, these pre-shows they're not edited. It's all as it happens. That's what a pre-show does. That's what it's for. It's to untie any of those channels of communication that you have in your brain. So if it's anything that makes anybody feel uncomfortable, then you need to not listen to it, okay? All right. Great, Phil. Thanks. Okay, so there's a pre-show. We will continue tomorrow for the October 29th show. Be back with new shows on Wednesday, the 30th. Halloween is Thursday, the 31st, isn't it? Yeah. So I'll see you guys on Wednesday. I'll be back in town very soon and talk to you then.